Good morning. First, I want to thank Reverend Crystal for the invitation to be able to spend time with you this morning. And I want to thank Pete, Jackie, and Jerry for the music. Pete and I conferred, so all the songs that we're singing today are ones that really speak to me, so I appreciate them being part of the service. I'd also like to welcome a couple of special visitors, along with my wife, my daughter, Jenny, and my granddaughter, Kirsten. Hi, Jenny. My grandson, Evan, is off with Miss Trudy. And my mom is here. Her name is Dorothy, and next to her is my friend Jeff, who has been a friend of mine for 45 years since college. So, I have to give a little shout-out to a streaming community because I have a couple of friends. Hi, Jamie. Hi, Jennifer. That they're watching. Every day, we encounter unlimited opportunities to experience life here on this earth. What decisions and choices we make create our own personal experience of the world. Many of these decisions are now second nature to us, so no real thought or exploration happens. We simply choose to do what we've previously done before. Sometimes we're not really fully understanding whether these choices serve us or not. We're usually pretty quick to label them as defining them as either good or bad. This makes it very difficult for us to receive any of the messages they have to share with us or to recognize any of the value contained within them. Had we waited, we might have come to see they were pointing the way toward the light. So what keeps us from waiting? What makes us so quick to repeat our decisions? The answer always feels the same to me. It's fear. And who or what is generating the fear? For me, it's the ego. That part of me whose main function is to protect me and to keep me safe. To make sure I stay separate from the world so that I don't get too close to anything and get hurt. Noble as this may sound, what it does, without meaning to, is to keep me small and disconnected and afraid. The ego conjures up strong feelings like rejection and sadness, and disappointment, and loneliness, and these lead into deeper feelings of unworthiness, of not being enough, of not being loved. And beyond these, it creates a world of conditionality, setting up rules like, I won't be happy until X happens, or its twin, I'll be happy when X happens. And then we see and come to believe the whole world outside of ourselves works according to the same rules. So that we hear something like this, I will love you as long as you give me what I want. Make me happy. Each statement is coated with fear layer on layer. And we think to ourselves, if I don't comply, they won't blank. And we fill in the blank with all sorts of things, all of which boils down to this, they won't love me. And because we see the world through these eyes and then believe that those around us will act the same way, we're tempted to think that God, Mother, Father, Creator, whatever you refer to, the divine, acts in the same manner. The God has the same kind of expectations and demands. And so we come to know the ultimate fear, which is that God's love is conditional. What's more challenging still is that we often don't feel as though we know the rules. What does God want for me? What does God want from me? How am I supposed to be able to figure that out? Of course, there are people all around you who will tell you what God's plan is for you and for the world. And they say they know, and you should listen to them. And they're fully prepared and invested in sharing their fears with us. It even appears to make them happy. But I sense the truth is that they just want us to join them in the misery. A misery born from fear and from feeling separate. I suspect this may have happened to you, this feeling of being disconnected or confused. Sometimes these feelings can be directed inward. They can freeze us in place and hold us so tightly we can't even move. Perhaps you've tried to escape, but found yourself lost down a rabbit hole or two or three. Perhaps you've experienced so much fear and pain in your life that it has manifested in physical form, in some kind of sickness or disease. I believe many of us have spent considerable time exploring and investigating the things that have happened to us and sought to find out the reasons why. We may have sat and wondered, what could I have done differently? How could I have found what I was looking for without all this suffering? Or why are all these other people here trying so hard to prevent me from being happy? That's another gambit of the ego. It suggests you can find the answer if you keep trying. And although our ego can seem to be the source of trouble, it's not the enemy. We're not served by trying to avoid it or ignore it or eradicate it. Our ego exists to help us to navigate this world, and we need its help. We need it as an ally. We benefit when we foster a relationship where our ego is connected to our heart and to our spirit. So how do we find our way out of this wilderness of fear? How do we hear our inner voice, the one that sets us free? How do we open up to the wisdom inside and observe all the feelings without judgment, to allow them to surface and then release those that we know lead us into the wilderness, and to remember that we have free will and can make any choice we want and shift our attitude? It's been important for me to recognize that I often drive myself to uncover the source of my feelings, believing it's the only way to discover their meaning or to set things right or to feel free. I have a question for you. Have you ever tried to remove old wallpaper? I wonder if your experience is the same as mine. I had the joy of doing this just recently. Because what happens is we often find another, even uglier wallpaper underneath it. And it can be a frustrating process. It's just like trying to find the root cause for some of our experiences. And if it becomes too frustrating, we may tend to get easily distracted, to decide to do something else, and then we don't go back. This can seem the same regardless of whether you're working on something physical, emotional, intellectual, or spiritual. You get just so far and bam, you hit the wall. You run into something more difficult to unravel than you have either the time or the skill to handle. So we allow ourselves to become distracted. And if you're really clever, you have a lengthy list of reasons why shifting your attention to something else makes sense to you. It's exhausting and painful and time-consuming and ultimately very unsatisfying and unsuccessful. Well, here's the part that's the good news. Because we can decide to bypass all of the layers and go directly into the center, to our heart and the sacred connection to Source. Here's another question for you. Won't be able to see it, but Kirsten will recognize it. A maze. It's one found in all sorts of kids' books. Kirsten and I do them every once in a while. Did the world train you? Did culture train you to be a good boy or a good girl and always start at the beginning? If they did, I'm going to suggest a different route. Next time you attempt a maze, try working from the inside, where the little gold nugget is, outward to the beginning. I found that it's so much easier. Same thing happens regarding directions. Ignoring the GPS for a minute. If you're somewhere and you want to get somewhere, often you tend to think, how am I going to get there? So much easier if you think about where you want to end up and work your way back to where you are. Here's one thought about that process. Because starting on the outside and working in, I don't know about you, but I seem prone to see obstacles. But when I work from the inside out, I seem to find solutions. So how can we release the hard path and embrace the loving, simpler, joyful path? How can we find our way out of the wilderness? I invite you to join me in considering an expanded view of meditation. Meditation that goes both inward, not for specific answers to every problem we're facing, but to rest peacefully in our sacred center and to open wide and feel the connection to the divine. And then to recognize that not all meditation is done while sitting or with your eyes closed. Sometimes it's done while walking in nature, or putting together a puzzle, or when listening to music that frees us, like this. Sometimes meditation is done by holding a baby. I got to hold Kirsten on the day she was born, and her brother Evan, and her cousin, Tessa, who's out in Rochester, and Maureen and I can't wait to get out there in a couple of weeks and hold her. Sometimes it's pets, some beloved pet that you have. Meditation is a process of letting go and relaxing thoughts and moving into your heart center, to that space that feels open and sacred. It's here where you're connected to the divine. It's here where all the messages are received from this calm, abundant, radiant space. It's here where there's clarity. In this place, you can allow beliefs that cause you discomfort to fall away, and you can surrender to love. It's not an abandoning of your free will. It's an embracing of the truth that who you really are is love. This is your very core. And that in this core, you know yourself as beautiful and healthy and connected and creative and peaceful, that you're the essence of heaven, and you know you can create this same heaven right here on earth. So how is this done? How can we take this essence of heaven and bring it right here along our journey No doubt, it may be different for each of us, even different depending on what day it is. Knowing and believing that my true nature is love, my desire and my intention is to create experiences that reflect this truth. So I'm always watching. For me, it's through deep conversations with others, like the retreat this past weekend. Very deep, meaningful conversations with other people. It just brings you into that sacred space where you get to see and feel someone else's heart. It also happens through a hug or a shared smile or seeing and being seen. That feeling of being loved and appreciated for who you are. You don't have to do anything or be anything other than who you are. Sometimes the reflection happens through a simple act of giving or receiving. One created for me or one created by me. Some people feel that one person cannot make a real difference in this world. I don't believe this. So I want to share an idea with you. It's something I'm doing right now. I'm going to make a contribution, a donation. I set myself a minimum to support people in every country of the world. The timetable doesn't matter, and I already know it's going to happen. Along the way, I'm going to create a scrapbook of sorts that will help remind me that I'm connected to everything and everyone here. And I get to share the love and let it pour through me. I can already feel it, and it's a beautiful thing. It makes me feel alive, and for me, it brings heaven to earth. There are other ways to feel alive and to meditate, to connect with the love that is our source. I'm aware now of experiences that create a tenderness inside me. They can happen when I'm reading a book or watching a movie, and they can bring me to tears, and I used to be embarrassed to cry when something like this happened to me. And I was wondering what other people would be thinking about that, but now I see that's a wilderness thought. So if I want to go back into the wilderness, that's the direction I can go. But if I don't, come back in and feel what I'm feeling. Because what other people think, that's up to them. And I adore moments now when I clear the way to feel, to truly feel what's happening inside me, feel the sweetness of love, and to remember how it felt in heaven. It was simply divine. I now love to step out of my wilderness and move beyond all that my head and the world tells me. I now love to step into what my heart tells me. The truth that all things are possible and that all experiences are open to me. Whatever limits or lack I believed in the past, I now know the truth. They're not real. They're just reminders. They're guideposts to show me the way home. They're gifts, really. Maybe it would be helpful for me to share one example with you. Recently, our own beloved Reverend Crystal alerted me that the Unity Worldwide Spiritual Institute, which I didn't even know existed, was encouraging the submission of proposals to teach an online spiritual explorers class. The idea was really attractive to me. I didn't stop to think why. Just went with my initial favorable reaction. So I went to their website and I downloaded the proposal requirements. And I read the accompanying materials and thought, I can do this. I spent a lot of time working on the proposal but could not get myself organized. So I meditated and received a very clear message. What I heard was, you're trying to create this from your head. That's wilderness thinking instead of from your heart. So I shifted, and everything slowed down, and it was easy to complete. So I submitted it and waited, not patiently, mind you, but I submitted it and waited for an answer. So I meditated some more and received another clear answer that says, talk with your ego. So I did, and my ego said, I want them to say yes. Well, a day later, I received an email from the program director. She appreciated my interest but indicated they'd chosen other proposals. So can anyone guess what my ego thought of this decision? I'll spare you the suspense. It wasn't happy. Predictably, my ego's process was, what was wrong with my proposal? I thought it was good. I thought spiritual seekers would enjoy it. Why didn't they pick me? Does that remind you at all of grade school when you're out on the field and you're picking up teams? Pick me! Pick me! Why didn't they pick me? Then gratefully, a part of me stood back and observed all that was happening to me in my wilderness. Yes, the pain of rejection, the dent to my self-image and the disappointment, and beneath these, the feelings of fear. And they came out more as statements. They don't think I'm worthy. Worse yet, they don't love me. Have you ever said these things to yourself? But my ego knows how to protect me. Or would it be better to say my self-image? So it went merrily along its way into blaming. It said, there must be something wrong with them. Wow. The observer in me has had a lot of practice, and gratefully its voice was suddenly loud and insistent. Hey, it's me, your observer. It's time to take a chill pill. How about we do that breathing thing again? You know, the one you call meditation? You know, taking long, slow breaths one after the other. Oh, good. You're doing it. Keep going. Doesn't it feel great? Yes, that's better. Okay, are you feeling at peace? Sweet, isn't it? Okay, can I tell you something? Here it is. Do you remember all those other times when you got upset, but you quieted down and you remained open, watchful for the gift wrapped up inside? And when you left the wilderness of suffering behind you, you found the valuable pearls sitting and waiting for you. In this inner sacred space connected to the center of love, you discovered and knew every right thing was happening and that it was all beautiful. You remember, right? And I did calm down and I did remember and I did patiently wait until the message became clear. The message was this: with all that I have going on this fall, having one more thing, no matter how seemingly valuable, it would have been crushing for me. Is it surprising that the universe, that God knew this? Is it surprising that God's infinite love saved me from a great deal of suffering? No, it's not surprising because I know the universe loves me just as I know the universe loves you. And I'm deeply grateful. I am so grateful to remember how much I'm loved. Now that I saw this clearly, I could shift my perspective from all those fear-based thoughts, leave them all behind and release them into the wind. And I slowed down and breathed and connected with my heart with the source of all love. That's when I emerged from the wilderness. That's when I let my suffering subside, and when I let all of my limits fall away. That's when I felt earth become like heaven. That's when I felt home. Thank you.